morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Last week we did a whole show, Mike and I did, on the abolishing or getting rid of the emergency room in Sedona. A very, very local special issue for people in Sedona.
Well, a local medical issue for sure, that a lot of people move to an area like this. They move to Sedona. Sedona is a internationally known place, and they move here. One reason is because we had emergency medical care. They realized they weren't going to get Cedars-Sinai here, but they were at least going to get medical care that, you know, could send them someplace else that could get if they needed it. And so that's a big deal for around here.
But today we're talking to Klaus von Suderheim is on too. Klaus?
Yes.
We're talking to a major figure in Medicare, in medical care of ideas about what to do, involved in creating, I think, Obamacare. Klaus is going to introduce him, but if you go on the internet, you're going to find 40 articles by this guy.
Exactly.
So you give folks an idea. So, Klaus, tell us who this character is.
Okay. Well, besides being a close friend of mine, Dave works for a company called Third Way, which is a government think tank. And maybe Dave can give us a brief summary of what the Third Way is and does. The interesting part is that for this show is that Dave wrote most, if not all, of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, this will be a major topic of the show today. And as an aside, he also served as chair of the Missoula Democratic Central Committee for a few years. So that's the introduction. Dave, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, and it's all yours.
So tell us, I'm kidding about Dave's articles, but Dave's got articles on everything about in Medicare, medical aid. I keep saying that, but Dave, you want to talk first about COVID a bit?
Yeah, I think you know we should start there because without just any basic public safety, public health, that we desperately need right now.
Dave. I'm sorry.
Let me speak up a little more. Yeah, we have, really blown it on healthcare with the coronavirus. I mean, we have probably one of the worst responses of any country in the world, and I think that's just the right place to start. I mean, we have to do better with all the basic contact tracing and testing so that we can, get people back to work and also protect people. And I just feel so bad that we have so utterly failed to do this right. And I just feel like that we should just kind of get that out there because, we could have been doing a lot better. We had a plan. As a matter of fact, back in January when I was looking around for the plan, we found it, and, as it turns out, it was, developed under President Clinton, and then George Bush contributed to it, and President Obama had it, and, of course, got to President Trump, and later we found out, he had thrown the plan away. Great. So we're really stuck now. We've got to figure this one out first. I know you guys are getting hit hard in Arizona and with COVID, and it's just, we've really got to focus on getting that contact tracing out there and doing a lot of more testing. Make sure that people can safely work and socially distance the way they need to do so you guys can have an emergency room that opens.
In Arizona, I think we have, Dave, the highest increase per 1,000, I guess, 32 per 1,000 people, something like that. We have the highest percentage increase in COVID in the nation right now.
Yeah. Well, David, I'd like to hear. We've done exactly the wrong thing because we have the USA has 4% of the population and 26% of the COVID cases. So whatever we're doing, it sure as hell isn't correct.
Right. Yeah. We you know, we've seen other countries, like South Korea was one of the best countries that very early on did a whole bunch of testing and screening the population. You know, we're just now getting used to it. I just was at the dentist, and before I entered the dentist's office, they took my temperature with a little special instrument that just read the temperature right off my forehead. I mean, we can do this. I mean, this is not hard technology, but we just the president has not mobilized our nation to really do what we need to do to keep the country working. As at the same time, we, you know, have a very effective containment strategy. So, you know, that's really where we need to start with healthcare, because that's what it's all about. Ultimately, everybody's health is dependent upon everyone else's health, and we gotta realize that we're all interdependent, and that we're gonna have to work together to get this problem solved.
So why did the U.S. fail so badly in dealing with COVID compared to some other countries? Other countries have done, I think, even worse than we have. But why did we do so badly? We should have had the most highly professional, the CDC and stuff, the best protection for this. The plans for pandemics should have been in the works for decades and ready to go.
Yeah, we had all those plans. I dug them out and read them very early on, and they would have done everything. They told us to do everything that we should have been doing. It's all written down, and we had the foresight to figure that stuff out. We even had some of the right stockpiles, and we had a lot of the right policy apparatus in place. But you know, unfortunately, Trump just disbanded that task force that was supposed to be in charge of the coronavirus kind of response. And then just basically try to deny that this was a problem. And so, you know, we don't have to rehash all this, but that's the real big problem. And I think Congress has done a good job of trying to recover and can provide funding. One of the things I think that we all can look forward to, you know, is the vaccine. I think there is where the Trump administration is actually not doing quite so bad. I'd like to see us buy 10 vaccines. I think we should buy, before they're even approved, we should buy and produce 10 vaccines.
Dave, go ahead. You're going to have to speak up. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We need your lecture hall voice.
This is radio. Bam it out.
Yeah, pretend you're at Carnegie Hall and the microphone is low class. Okay. Project a little.
Thank you. We need to buy, as I say, 10 vaccines for the entire country. We don't know which one is going to work. Trump has decided only buy 3, but we need to buy 10 vaccines for the entire country so that the one that will work, once we have that figured out, we can just immediately go to dispensing that 300 million doses of that vaccine. So that's what Congress is focusing on now, and I think, you know, they've done a good job so far in making sure that testing and coronavirus treatment is free for people, as it should be, but we've got a big challenge ahead of us, and that's another big healthcare project that we've got.
Dave, I'm sorry, you're not coming through. Slow down a bit. Slow down a bit and get right on top of whatever your device is. Our technical expert is waving his hands for you to talk louder. So,
okay. Is this any better now?
That's better. Thank you.
That's great, Dave. I'm sorry about the problem.
No worries. We appreciate the feedback there. So, I was just saying that we need to have a really prolific response to producing a vaccine. That's what's ultimately going to get us out of this mess. So that's one of the things we've got to get Congress working on, as well as opening the emergency rooms so that people can get the care. But we got to just prevent this disease from spreading. So is that better?
That's good, Dave. And so you see the key to this, the only way to end this virus and these re-breakouts is to actually have an effective immunization for it. And folks, we're talking about hundreds of millions of doses of this thing. It's a major, major and very expensive project, but something has to be done, right?
Yeah, and you know, the cost of the vaccines, though, if you look at what it would mean for our economy, it's really a drop in the bucket. You know, we could spend 20, 30, 40 billion even on a vaccine or multiple vaccines, and that would just barely make up. That would, you know, we're the cost of the economy right now is in the trillions of dollars, and so really the cost of a vaccine is a drop in the bucket. We should be, you know, Congress has put a lot of money into it. The administration is thinking they can get away with just three vaccines, but we really need to do 10.
Why do we need to do 10 instead of 3? Why do we need to? And these are possible vaccines or vaccines that have been proved to be working, Dave. Yeah.
Well, we're trying a whole bunch of new things. We're trying new, really interesting technology that doesn't take, 18 months to produce. We're trying new, it's called RNA messenger vaccines. And we don't know what's going to work. So really about one out of every 10 drugs actually makes it to approval for the FDA. So that's why we really need to have those 10 vaccine candidates funded and paid for and ready to go. Once the testing and the clinical trials are all finished, we'll know which one will work. And that's the one we want to just be ready to go the minute it is approved. I mean, that's like right out the door is what we should be doing. So.
I think that's an important point. I think that what I see, Dave, and I don't know, is the sort of weakening over the last few years and even before by the Republican Congress of American institutions and medical institutions that are designed to protect the public, like the CDC. I think that even in the Obama administration, the Republicans foot on the accelerator just kept the spending down to what's an acceptable level to conservative Republicans, but it's not really what we needed. When we have that pandemic, we're not ready. We don't have good response. And I know that the Trump leadership is preposterously all over the place, but that's not just the only problem, right?
Well, I think, to sum it up in a single sentence, you know, New Zealand hasn't had any new cases in 2 weeks, and you know we're exploding. And the reason is that strangely in America, you know, a country with great scientists and institutions, the COVID is treated as a political issue rather than as a medical and humanitarian issue, and that's the fault of Trump. It comes down to Trump.
It's like this rally in Tulsa. It seems almost designed to spread the virus. I don't know. I mean, Trump's always been in a denial of reality, right, Mike? And this is an example when it's very important to the American people of that denial having political
effect. Well, the Democratic meme of you have an insane man making decisions for so many people is true. I mean, this is a guy that has absolutely no heart, no soul, no understanding of any problem other than his own profit and ball movements, and he's making decisions for all of us. Your job, our job, is to stay alive until, as our guest says this morning, as David says this morning, until there's some sort of treatment and best case scenario, a vaccine. That's what you try to stay alive until there's a vaccine. That's in 1919 epidemic. I think in three waves, their virus took 100 million people out of 500 million people that were infected. So we're not talking numbers like that yet, but 122,000 dead Americans is nothing to sneeze at. We're going to talk about, we want to move on to the virus is something that can be talked about forever. I mean, this is the biggest, second biggest issue next to climate change that is facing the population of this planet. And it's bigger than climate change because it's immediate. It's now. People are dying. 3,000 cases a day in Arizona. But we're going to talk about one of the things that didn't get talked about in the media for very much, and it certainly was on the minds of Democrats, was you had this crafted health program. We dubbed it Obamacare, but the
opposition dubbed
the ADA
Obamacare in order to partisanized something like health care for American people. So you're trying to get health care for American people, and they made it only a Democratic thing, only an Obama thing. I mean, it's a strategy, Mike. But yeah, I think that what we'd like to talk about, Dave, a bit, because you've done so much work on this, is you're opposed to single-payer programs, and you want to expand Obamacare. And I know from one of your articles you say that you can expand Obamacare so that it covers almost everybody. Tell us about this.
Yeah, and let me just say up front that I think the Democratic Party is united on the idea that everybody should have health care coverage and that people shouldn't go bankrupt or should be able to afford the care that they need, right? So we have that all in common. I think, if I were in another country, lots of countries have single payer and it really works well for them. I think it's a solid, great idea. What I worry about is how we would get it done in America. And here's the problem. If we try to tomorrow change everybody's health care so that everyone got it through a single plan, provided by the government, you're going to find a lot of people just worried that their coverage wouldn't be as good, that they would be worried about, waiting lines. They'd be worried about, I would be worried about what Trump would, if he were president under a single payer plan, what he would do to women's health care, to transgender health care, what he's already doing to homos is horrible. And so having a single government plan is a big step for this country. And we passed Obamacare, in a way that was built on sort of bipartisan ideas. And, of course, as you said, the Republicans decided to make it a political issue. That's largely failed for them. They have not won on health care for quite a long time now. So I think it's proven successful. We took back the Congress and the House, and we're poised to make gains in the Senate. And so I think it's a bad political strategy for the Republicans to attack Obamacare at this point. Because people get that Obamacare protected people for a pre-existing condition. And that's what people want. They want to be able to get care. Now we got a lot more work to do. I mean, we have costs that are way too high for people. I mean, like if you're got a $3,000 deductible, which a lot of workers in this country have, it's going to take you 6 weeks to pay off that deductible just to get care that you could afford, for a typical median income worker. So we're a long way from getting a good healthcare system. We still have millions of people who are uninsured as well. So that's where I think we can work together. I think we can work towards, and this is what I think Joe Biden is talking about, how to cap people's costs, how to make sure that those deductibles are not just keeping them from the healthcare that they need, and make sure everyone gets coverage. It's going to take another big effort to do that, but I think it's going to be, worth the fight for that.
Well, take some of the conservative arguments against Obamacare that quite frankly, were ridiculous but not ridiculous. You had people that got caught. You had people that those are the stories that it might only have been three people, but those are the stories that they tell over and over and over again, that my grandma couldn't get into Obamacare. So how are these issues that the other side has used to attack Obamacare? Now, we talked about, you just mentioned coverage, and you just mentioned deductibles, and that eliminating them or getting them down to really manageable is certainly number one and two of fixing Obamacare. But a lot of us always felt it could be fixed, and then the whole wave of Medicare for All started. And the whole fixing Obamacare thing just melted away. But you're absolutely correct, and that's one of the reasons we're excited to have you on the show this morning, is those of us that believed in it, and there was a lot, knew that Obamacare could be fixed, that this was just the beginning. How are we going to fix it? What besides deductibles and coverage, what else does the other side say that you're going to fix in this third way?
Well, I think what we have is an opportunity to make the case to the American public that Democrats have delivered on health care, We protected people with pre-existing conditions. We fought the Republicans who didn't want to do that. And we can now take the next few steps. I think, I think the Medicare for All movement really proved that people are hungry for another big effort on healthcare. It's not good enough. I mean, it's just that we have too much profit-taking in this country. We have too much, people who are focused on their bottom line, not the public's health. And we need, we need more regulation. We need more, help for people who are working. People who are it's a lot of people who are working that healthcare costs are very regressive for them. People are getting crushed by the healthcare costs because their wage increases, their raises really, are going to healthcare right now. And so that's all got to be, come under control. And I think we can do all that without making everybody change their coverage. So that's the key. And I think the Republicans, have tried everything. My favorite one is when they call it socialized medicine. I mean, I think the people who are, for Medicare for All wouldn't call Obamacare socialized medicine by any stretch. Maybe we need more of that, but the Republicans just basically been caught in their own lies. I mean, there's always a few problems, but, overall, we've cut the number of people uninsured in half, and people's costs have been not as bad as they were in the past. I mean, it's not good enough, but it's like getting better. So I think the Democrats have a great case to make that we're the party that delivers on healthcare, and that we can take these next steps, which is to cap people's costs and cover everyone.
So tell me, which is better, the revised Obamacare or Medicare for All?
Well, I think we have to draw on both. I mean, I think Medicare is a really strong program, and it has some very powerful tools that we can use. Like, it has limits on how much doctors and hospital can charge you. And, that's something that we're debating now with these surprise bills that sort of we had that big debate back before COVID, and we were making progress. And one of the ideas is just to use Medicare's pricing as a kind of a benchmark for what people could be charged in the private sector. And I talk to a lot of employers, big employers, who are they're beside themselves with the cost. They're not big enough, actually, to control the cost themselves, and they want to see this happen, too. They want to have use Medicare in that way. So I think, Medicare is just an awesome program. It's been built up for, decades now, and we should use parts of that could really help the rest of the economy.
Should it be extended to people who are younger, like 50 years old, or how would Medicare, even though I'm on Medicare, is extremely efficient, how would you do that, I guess, is my question to you.
Yeah, there are a lot of options for having people buy into Medicare, have the option to go in early. Those are all worthy of debating, and I'm sure we'll. They give us leverage. That's the kind of thing that helps, that's those political fights in Washington, because a lot of people are, companies, profit companies are worried about extending Medicare because it would mean less profits for them. But on the other hand, the private firms that are providing coverage now, they're more open to this sort of thing. So I do think there's some leverage there. And I think the big thing that we got to focus on still is how do we get the remaining people who don't have coverage today covered, and how do we cap their costs? And I think you can do all that without, you're going to have to find a way to do that without trying to get everybody in Medicare. Right? In other words, if you're working for Walmart right now and you've got just a really kind of meager benefit and you can't afford the care you need, then you got to have some additional help. We've given a lot of help to people who buy coverage on their own. What Obamacare does is it lets people who are buying health care coverage on their own, or if they're self-employed, they get subsidies. But people who are working, a minimum wage job, we're not giving them those subsidies. Well, we should fix that, right? I mean, why should somebody who's making $15,000 and working on their own get more of a subsidy than somebody who's working at Walmart making $15,000 and they're not getting any subsidy?
That's amazing, Dave. That's a very important point. What I saw when Obamacare came in, personally, and talking to people, what people really struggled with the payment. The payments may not seem big if you're in Washington, you know, planning this stuff, but for ordinary individuals, the costs seem high. And a lot of younger people were very resistant, Dave, because they feel that they're healthy and they didn't want to pay anything more. They want to keep all their money they can and go to a bar and meet their friends.
Well, $200-$300 a month was significant, and when you're making $12 an hour, and even for health care, especially like Steve said, if you're not getting sick. So before we go on, I want to make sure we got this argument clearly framed. We got we're talking about expanding Obamacare. We're talking about fixing Obamacare. We're talking about more coverage, cheaper coverage from the framework of Obamacare. You got a lot of talk about Medicare for all everywhere for the last couple of years. We haven't, at least not in podunk America, or at least the rest of America outside Washington, have we talked about fixing Obamacare. All we see are the personal attacks from this president and from the Republican Party on this working and at least what emerges very often in the media as this viable health care system that has worked for millions and millions of people. I want to kind of lead into this question in that. Is this kind of a way for insurance companies to still make money? Is this like a transition? Do you see this as a transition from where we are now insurance-wise and healthcare-wise to Medicare for all and a really strong Medicare for all where deductibles and those prescription drug prices come down to normal levels, but we gotta philosophically, do we have to take the profit out of healthcare before we get reasonable healthcare costs, Dave?
Well, profit is like one of the sisters, Mercy, kind of said, without no margin, no mission. I mean, you got to let people have the ability to invest in new equipment. If you're a hospital, you don't want to have like just 20-year-old equipment, right? So you got to have some amount of money for the hospitals and the doctors to do new things. That's really important. I think that like right now, I mean, there's a lot of regulation already, but we're not completely there yet. I mean, the hospitals can charge whatever they want if they're not in Medicare. So I think the Medicare limit on pricing, that's a really important step because it provides a benchmark so like right now in certain areas of the country, if you go to like Southern Florida or parts of California, I mean, Arizona is not as bad, but you'll see, doctors or hospitals charging five times what Medicare charges. And that's just criminal. I mean, that's just, they've got a market monopoly, basically, and they're using it. So we got to have more regulation of that kind of thing. That's the first thing. And then we got to have some more leadership on this that says we can move forward. We got to pull together people who believe in Medicare for all and the people who believe in Obamacare, and we got to work together and find a way to limit the profits so that they're not just going to the big equity firms in Wall Street, and that's true for insurance companies and doctor groups, and we need to limit all that. And then we also have to make sure that that money goes to people who really need the care. So there's a lot of smoothing out we can do, and we're going to have to do it alone. Remember, Obamacare didn't, was we tried to compromise with the Republicans when we got that thing done, and if we were going to do it ourselves, we would have made it a lot more generous. So I think we can also make those parts of Obamacare itself that are a little stingy right now. If you're not doing great if you got an Obamacare plan, you're doing okay, but you could, your deductibles are still pretty high. So we got to bring those deductibles down, bring the premiums down to make them affordable. And then, we got a really strong foundation with those two parts. We use parts of Medicare and parts of Obamacare, move them all forward together, and that's a powerful thing that I wouldn't want to be a Republican if I were running against that, because that could be, it could actually get done. It's practical, and it's based on Democrats who have a proven experience. I think if Democrats run on that kind of agenda, then we're unstoppable.
They created such a fury about Obamacare, even though it was designed to help them, and the Democrats that took a stand and voted for it. We had one of our Congress people lost the election because she had supported Obamacare. They managed to stir up this massive rage against Obamacare that the Democrats, frankly, were ineffective in countering. So if you're going to extend the program, Dave, how do you do that in a way so people understand what you're doing? So many people got pissed off about Obamacare. It was so complicated, and there were so many compromises, and it took so long to do, et cetera, et cetera. How do you expand it efficiently and so that people understand what you're doing?
Let me add to that question. In one of your articles, didn't you suggest that everybody would have to have some kind of insurance?
Well, so here, I think the really simple message that we can ought to promise everybody in America is that you're not going to pay more than you can afford for your health care. And that means, based on your income, if you're making, your costs are capped. So, regardless of how much you make, your costs are capped. And they should be, capped at, no more than 9.5% or 9%. So, if you're making $200,000, your costs are capped. And if you're making $20,000, you should have a much lower cap. But everyone's costs are capped. That's the key thing. So, if you're making $20,000, your costs are capped at, say, 1% of your income. And every pay, you got to reach the point where people were or can't pay anything, and that they should be free for them. But, between that and level of poverty and people who are rich, everyone's costs are capped, and that's what we should hold politicians accountable for. If you cap my costs, then, and I don't have to pay more, and I'm getting access to health care, and it's good quality health care, then that should be the thing we hold our elected officials accountable for.
Why is our health care so much more expensive than every other industrial countries in the world?
Why is we haven't actually tried to control it. Just let it run out. I mean, it's like if you let the thing, just go off, fly off the flywheel, it's going to keep rolling away, and it's out of control. I mean, that's, it's every other country in the world has dealt with this stuff. And the amazing thing about America is that, we have actually a combination of everyone's healthcare system. And our healthcare for our veterans is kind of more like the National Health Service in Britain. The healthcare for our employers is kind of more like the German employment-based system. And our program for our elderly, Medicare, is actually the name of the Canadian system. So we have actually kind of drawn from a lot of different countries, and the Obamacare is kind of like the Swiss and the Dutch system. So we have all these different parts. We just haven't melded them together to get it all under control. And we can do that without, having the government in charge of everything. It has to be a, combination of regulation of private sector and government policies. But that's what we do in America. We do that really well when we put our minds to it. And we haven't quite gotten to that. I'm sad to say that, but we can. I'm very optimistic.
So we have a question from a listener, which is, in comparing the way we've responded, I guess, to COVID, but also our whole care system, the fact that we have so many states going so many different directions, when you compare us to Germany, where everything is a national plan, has that contributed to chaos and the problem?
Yeah, I think we've got some states who have picked up the kind of Republican line that it's not a big problem, and everyone go back to work, and we don't have to worry about testing and contact tracing, and have ignored that. And so those states are now getting hit hard because they have ignored those things. So yeah, I think I would like to see states come forward with a plan you know, and have the federal resources and requirements that they implement that plan. You know, it's as simple as that. We don't have to have the government come in with, you know, as Trump wants to do, send the army in to distribute the vaccines. We just have to have the states be transparent and accountable for their plans to make sure, you know, these testing and ultimately vaccine distribution really happens effectively in a fair way.
Let me say that again. That's an interesting idea. You would think that somebody would have come up with it by now. But in other words, have the states come up with a plan. Okay, Arizona, you got you want to play this game. But then you come up with your plan, and then have the federal government provide the resources for that plan. And if it flops, and if people die, or if it works, then good on, you know, then the state can proceed on its own ideas for it, for that state. I mean, it seems like when it comes to something like a pandemic, you'd want, that's what a strong central government is for. This is when you need a nationwide plan. We didn't get that. We got this guy that we got denial. And so the states were left. So the states are making deals with each other. The states are making deals with private companies. I mean, this is a sort of hodgepodge and insanity. Your plan would have been much. Come up with a plan. We'll fund it, and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, there are a lot of Democratic governors and some Republican governors did that, and they, you know, California, New York, and Ohio is a Republican governor. They really got on top of it, and they're better off for it. I mean, we've seen the results, and I think, gosh, if you know some of these states that had screwed up, you know, if they had failed on their own terms, then you know, maybe stronger action from the federal government would be appropriate. You know, but you know, until we kind of hold the states accountable for what they should be doing, and then finding out when they're not doing it. It's really hard to take corrective action until you really caught them doing it.
So our governor, yeah, for example, Dave, put out a pretty good edict, pretty well timed, but then he undid it a couple of weeks early, I think, when because Trump was coming to visit. And now he's taken to wearing masks in public. We're not talking about if you're walking in the forest. We're talking about if you're in situations where you can't do social distancing, whether you should wear a mask. Now that it's an unpopular topic, he's passed it on to the cities. So the cities have to, and we had, I think, a very brave decision by the mayor of Cottonwood to require masks, even when the city council voted narrowly, I think, against it. And so that, I don't know, this ping pong of responsibility, Dave, where he wants responsibility at one time, and as soon as it becomes a hot potato, then he passes it off to other people. I don't think that's that rare.
Yeah, and that's the Republican governors and the Democratic governors who've done this well, they really just turn to their public health experts and say, all right, what do you need from us, from as elected officials, what do you need from us to protect the public's health? And if you follow the advice of the you know, the people who have watched these, you know statistics and kind of keeping an eye and know how this disease is spreading, that takes the politics out of it. I mean, then it's really about, you know, what we need to do to keep people healthy, and not about, you know, whether we should be wearing masks or not. I mean, it's sort of that we need to have this. I think Tony Fauci was a great example of, I mean, somebody who really, while he was able to talk freely, he was really helping the country understand what we needed to do. And of course, that we know now that the Trump administration has silenced him.
Well, since the governor took it out of the state's hands and said, okay, individual communities, and this is insane to begin with, that a state would take the power out of individual communities' hands if they weren't going to do some sort of statewide program. Anyway, I'm looking at a list of 32 communities, including Phoenix, Tucson, and Flagstaff, by the way. We're talking, so that's 90% of the population of Arizona right there, that the minute they could mandate masks, they did. Phoenix, Tucson, Flagstaff, the three biggest cities in the state, plus entire counties, Santa Cruz County, I can go on and on, Gila River Indian Community, Gilbert, Mesa, we're talking about the population centers of the state of all require masks on this COVID. As soon as they could, they did, because they saw it. They knew it was necessary to help save lives.
Let me ask you a very general question, Dave, following up on Mike's thing there. We're looking at this chaotic mess that Mike's talking about. What is the single, or is there a single thing that's the most important way to improve American health care from the point of view of government?
Yeah, I just think we got to find that way. We got to build some trust between the public and the government. And I think if you can lay out a plan for people that says, here's what we're going to do. Here's how you can hold me accountable. I, as a president, will promise this. And if I don't deliver, don't vote for me again. Those simple promises, you're not going to have to pay more than a certain percentage of your income for your health care. And if for your premiums, for your deductibles, the whole package, you're going to be covered, and you're going to be guaranteed that your care will be affordable. And if I can't deliver for that to you, then I'm, I haven't done my job. So to me, that's the simple kind of political formula that then lets us do all this other stuff. There's a whole bunch of other things we need to do, but under that one simple promise, that can deliver a much better healthcare system for our country. That's fair.
Dave, in the few minutes that remain, let me ask you, so when we go perhaps door to door or a campaign via telephone, what should we say to the poor people who need it the most, who've been taught to hate Obamacare? What should we say to them to convince them that that it's Obamacare is really a good and a positive thing, and that the Democratic Party is the party, as you said, that has delivered on health care?
I think we got to fight the next battle, not the last one. So, people are going to think what they think about what's happened. And I think the thing to go forward on is, Democrats have protected people with pre-existing conditions. If you or one of your loved ones has, anything from asthma to cancer to heart disease, we stood there to make sure that insurance companies could not deny you coverage. And we're going to do more based on the fact that your costs are too high and just kind of move it forward. So I think it's just simply talk about pre-existing conditions. That's what Democrats protected. Republicans fought that. And move forward to, your costs are too high, whether you're poor or rich. Everybody's costs are too high. So
we're talking to David Kendall. We've got about a minute and a half left. Major American expert on healthcare.
We do want to encourage you.
If you want to read 45 articles on healthcare, look up Dave.
Well, we also want to talk about the Third Way as a national think tank, and that does center left thought.
Okay. Yeah. So that's an important point. I wish we had more time. I do encourage people to continue. I went on the website again, and there's almost no contact information for the Northern Arizona Healthcare's board of directors and stuff. We do have two people from Sedona, Jennifer Wesselhoff, who's the head of the Chamber of Commerce, who's on the board. And we also have Randy Garrison, who's from the Sedona area. He's our representative to Yavapai County. Both those folks are on the board of the hospital and good contacts. So, folks, if you'll keep up some pressure on this issue, maybe we can save the emergency room.
Okay, folks, don't forget, this show and all our shows are at vvid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.